For whistleblowers, journalists and democracy, it's been a confronting few weeks.
A remarkable story is happening in Australia right now.
Australian police have raided the offices of the country's national broadcaster, ABC.
The second operation against media outlets in just 2 days.
Journalists in Australia have condemned a police raid on the offices of the national broadcaster.
Last week, many of us were disturbed to see the Australian Federal Police raiding two media outlets, News Corp journalist Annika Smethurst and the ABC, using the fig leaf of protecting our national security.
They went through everything. They started in my bedroom, they went through my bedside drawers, under my bed, inside my bed, through all my clothes, the pockets in my clothes, as it's been well publicised, my underwear drawer, inside handbags, Christmas decorations, inside DVDs. I didn't even know I still owned a few DVDs. They went through page by page of every book I own, cookbooks, my sewing basket, behind picture frames. So, look, they were incredibly thorough.
Just before that, Australian Tax Office whistleblower Richard Boyle spoke out about the personal toll of being raided, then charged by police, over his disclosure of wrongdoing in the Tax Office. If found guilty, he faces up to 161 years in prison, even though most of his claims have been substantiated. But national security laws and a lack of whistleblower protection are just one aspect of the problem. Australia's defamation laws make it difficult to defend even truthful journalism in a courtroom. Our freedom of information laws are weak by world standards. The national security agencies are entirely exempt, and other bureaucrats just thumb their noses at them. And suppression orders mean dozens of journalists, including me, are currently being threatened with jail in Victoria over stories we wrote about the George Pell trial. Doing investigative journalism today feels like navigating a legal obstacle course, and it's only getting worse. This is Please Explain. I'm Michael Batchelard. This week, can Australians continue to take for granted the open exchange of ideas in our democracy? Or are we at a point where we need to take more active steps to defend freedom of the press? Joining us in our Melbourne studio are two of the country's most decorated investigative journalists, Adele Ferguson and Nick McKenzie. Nick has extensively covered national security and corruption issues and has won journalism's highest prize, the Walkley, 7 times. He's our deputy editor of the investigations team. Adele's dogged pursuit of misconduct in the banking sector is credited with contributing to the creation of the Banking Royal Commission, and she's the scourge of bad franchisors and dodgy retirement village operators. Welcome to both of you.
G'day, Batch.
Hi.
What was going through both of your minds as you watched the ABC and Annika Smethurst getting raided, Adele?
It was really chilling. I couldn't believe it. I thought, what the hell is going on in this country?
Nick?
I did an immediate stock take of what was at my desk because I thought, geez, am I going to be next? Yeah, it was in some respects surprising. And deeply concerning, and in principle deeply concerning. But I guess upon reflection, I do expect police occasionally to burst through the doors of journos, and I certainly operate as if they could burst through my door at any moment. So in some respects, it's more of the same.
And do you find that expectation or fear, if you like, that they might burst through your doors, do you find that chilling to your journalism?
It causes you to stay on your toes. Journalists, especially investigative journalists, we have a really privileged position in society in that we speak to people who work in government agencies, in police forces, in defence departments, and we know by doing that sometimes that confidential source or informant of ours may be breaching an employee regulation or indeed breaching the law. So in just doing that is operating in this grey legal area. And we sort of hope that that won't catch up with them. So we take all these steps to make sure it certainly won't. Given that we do exist in this strange place where our job is to find secret information, sometimes classified information, and to carefully and responsibly tell it to the public, I do understand that there will be this tension between the public interest and my job and the desire of agencies like the AFP and the Defence Department to stop these sorts of leaks. So when you say, is it chilling? It is chilling, but it's also, unfortunately, part of the business.
Adele, you've had a recent experience where one of your sources, a whistleblower from the Australian Tax Office, has had a terrible time and now faces up to 161 years in prison for the information that he got out. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, that was a real shock. I was doing a joint venture with Four Corners, looking at the tax office and the aggressive tactics it uses on small businesses and taxpayers. And this whistleblower came forward because he'd actually done the right thing and gone to the tax office and lodged a public interest disclosure, but it was dismissed as not being in the public interest. He then came to us. Obviously it was. And then just before we went to press, he was raided by the AFP and subsequently charged with 66 offences, which have a 161-year tag to them. And yeah, he's been through a terrible time. And there have been numerous reports put out after that looking into the tax office, and just about all of them have shown that the tax office needs to be reformed because it's got these aggressive tactics and a toxic culture.
And then you tried to find out what had happened through the Freedom of Information laws. How did that go?
Well, yeah, so Richard has actually been applying to the Freedom of Information to find out how did it take them just 15 days to come to the conclusion that he had nothing to say that was in the public interest. And he's been blocked every step of the way. You know, so the Freedom of Information Act is really restrictive. It's every time you put in an FOI, it comes back with just blank pages.
It's probably worth saying that whistleblowers aren't always necessarily purely white hats, that some of them have their own agendas, but nevertheless, it's our responsibility as reporters to protect our sources. How do you guys go about doing that when these kinds of the new legislation, national security legislation, and the other sort of unfriendly legislation is around, Nick?
Well, when the government under Malcolm Turnbull passed the suite of laws that, or intended to pass a suite of laws that made it easier for the government to look at the communications of journalists, so I do recall Malcolm Turnbull saying, well, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, journos, there are ways to conduct your business and stay a step ahead of the posse, as it were. And what he was saying was there are a whole range of encrypted applications, means of communication, which even the most, well, some of the best spying agencies in the world would struggle to uncover or track. Unfortunately, as an investigative reporter, I have to operate a bit like a drug trafficker. So 15 years ago, I think I kept the public phone box business alive in Melbourne. I would literally never use the same public phone box twice, certainly not in a row. And if you had five calls to make, you'd find five different public phone boxes across the inner city. It'd take a long time and you'd need lots of change. That's how I did that 15. Now, so technology's evolved. So I'm using different sorts of technology now to stay that step ahead. Now, I operate really with extreme paranoia. One of my favourite sayings is paranoia never killed anybody. I think it's a good saying for a journalist to cling on to. But ultimately, I'm doing this not to protect myself, it's to protect my sources. And the other thing I hold really, really dear, and I say to confidential sources who are taking big risks, even if somehow they slip up and they leave a trace, a crumb of evidence that suggests maybe they've been in touch with me, if I get that summons to a coercive hearing, which is meant to mean I have to tell the inquisitor who I'm speaking to, if I get a summons to court and I'm ordered to say, well, who's your source, in no circumstances will I say that. I mean, I am prepared to go to jail. I've been in that position before. It sounds like a big, bold thing to say, but it's just a simple truth. I think ultimately the best protection our sources have is journalists using all that technology, being really, really careful, but also at the end of the day, never, ever in any circumstance, even if it means going to jail ourselves, revealing a source.
Have you ever been raided?
I have been raided. Yeah, it's and I've been hit with been raided by police. I've been subject of phone tapping interception, and I've been hit with summons from various powerful bodies. And I mean, I think I can proudly say that I have been I can't go into a great deal of detail because of the secrecy provisions that surround it, but I have been in a coercive hearing, and I was asked and warned. When I refused to reveal a source, warned again and again, you will be prosecuted for doing this. And stood strong. I guess at the back of my mind, though, was this sense that, and I think maybe we've seen a bit of a tipping point with these raids, but in the back of my mind was, even though the council assisting was saying, Nick, you have to tell your source or you'll be charged, and I was saying, I'm not going to do it, sir. No, do your worst to me. I sort of knew that when that brief got to the DPP, they would look at this and go, hang on, this is just a journalist doing his job responsibly and well and working in the public interest. We're not going to charge him. It's a waste of money, a waste of resources. It's unfair and unjust. So I do think there is this inbuilt discretion in our system generally that does mostly look after responsible journalism. But again, and now the raids make me think, well, hang on, is that still there? Are those decision makers who can exercise discretion? The Defence Department could have exercised its discretion in the case of those recent raids and said, well, hang on, we don't like what's been published. We think there's been a breach of classified secrecy provisions, but it's not going to be productive to raid a journalist's house. Let's just let that one go past. The AFP could have also said the same thing after the Defence Department gave them the case to follow up. Well, listen, guys, you know, where's this going to get us? Is it in the public interest? Is it a good use of resources? And ultimately, will we do more damage to the cause that law enforcement and the Defence Department should really support, accountability, responsible accountability in Australia, by doing these raids? And I think the answer to that would have been yes, we will harm that cause.
It's interesting from the point of view of using discretion. It seems like particularly Neil Gagan's, the AFP Chief Commissioner's comments about he'd be prepared to see a journalist in jail, you know, if it got to that point, that it suggests that perhaps those old discretions are being used less strongly than they have been in the past. Adele, do you feel that things are slipping?
Yeah, I do feel that. You know, we've got shield laws, but they vary from state to state. I was subject to that with Gina Reinhart, who wanted my sources. And, you know, it was a lot of sweating because it was in WA.
That was a story over a family dispute, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And she wanted sources that would have revealed many more sources, and we had to fight it. And, you know, it's the same thing as Nick was saying, you face jail, but it's just what you would do. You know, it doesn't even enter your head that you would give up your sources. It's what it's all about. But, yeah, I do feel that the courts are going the wrong way for journalism. When you look at defamation, suppression, it all seems to be tipping in the wrong direction.
It's not to do with source protection, but I am among 30-odd journalists who are facing contempt of court proceedings in the Victorian Supreme Court over a suppression order breach in the George Pell matter. I can't say much about it, but there's a case where the DPP certainly seems to be pushing ahead with the prosecution. What about the other obstacles to investigative reporting? There are many. Defamation law, there's the blockages in the Freedom of Information system, and there's suppression orders. Is it getting harder in those respects as well, Adele?
It is, but I think, like Nick's saying, there are ways around it, and there are still, you know, while there's a chilling effect with whistleblowers staying silent, some of them are still brave enough to want to come forward, and where there's a will, there's a way. You know, so you do find ways around it with technology, with, you know, the old-fashioned meeting directly, getting things in an envelope that you don't know where they've come from. So everybody's protected.
There are still ways to get information to journalists.
Yeah, there are.
And Nick, you are concurrently facing several defamation cases, as has been the case consistently for the past few years. Is that exercising a chilling effect on investigative journalism and freedom of speech?
In my mind, there's absolutely no doubt that defamation laws and the defamation regime in Australia is far more damaging to journalism at the moment than these raids and what police might be up to in respect of trying to find out who leaked what. And it is a bit of a pity. The way the raids are a big deal, I absolutely get it. I think that the media uproar has been justified. But we've had none of that uproar and sustained pressure in respect of defamation laws. And very quietly behind the scenes, those defamation laws are killing important pieces of journalism every day of the week. They're making editors scared to publish things that the public deserve to know. And there's zero political appetite for these laws to change. And that is killing our profession. I cannot tell you how damaging that legal regime is at the moment. And every Australian should be worried about it. Unfortunately, nobody really knows much about it. And certainly there's no real I think, sustain political pressure for change.
There is some. There's a review underway at the moment, and New South Wales, the worst state for defamation law, and the courts are most aggressive, but and they are reviewing it at the moment. But it gets bogged down in technicalities, and I think it's difficult for the general public to understand what's going on. So there's been various suggestions about what we could do about all this. A Press Freedom Act has been suggested by Peter Grester, constitutional change, some kind of equivalent of the First Amendment in the United States, which guarantees free speech, or perhaps tinkering with the existing national security laws to introduce greater exemptions for journalists. What sort of things do you guys see that we need to do, Adele?
Yeah, I do think that we do need to have a wholesale changes so that there is some knowledge of press freedom, so that if it's in the public interest, then we can pursue that. At the moment, it's just really fuzzy and it's a crapshoot. You know, defamation is so difficult to win because the courts are so biased.
Listen, I'd love to see a constitutional change, but that's not going to happen given how difficult it is to change the constitution. And ultimately, I think the public is sceptical of the media and journalists, often for good reason. So to have that public support that would lead to political change, we may not get there. It would be great to have some legislative change around defamation law to put in a public interest test to increase what's known as qualified privilege. So where a journo is reporting on something that is in the public and political interest, the affairs of a politician, that even if in court they struggle to get the admissible evidence to prove that, they can defend their reporting by saying, well, it was responsible, it was justified, it was important, and it was done in a way that the court sees, well, hang on, we our journalists had no choice but to tell the public about this. So legal changes that increase those protections would be great. I'd also like to see, and I think this is what's happening, the good news about these raids is hopefully police forces around the country, including the AFP, of doing a big stock take and saying, rightio, let's think about what we're doing. Let's exercise our discretion. Let's actually, and the big failing here for me is the AFP didn't pause and think long enough about what's the role of the press. At its best, the press is performing a public service. What's the impact of us raiding journalists? That's going to send really strong sort of intimidation signals to sources. It's going to undermine the work of the press. Let's have a think about what we're doing here and come to the obvious conclusion that it's not worth doing. And so if we can have that mindset change where our agencies that do these sorts of things think longer and harder before they do them. I also think the media, and this is, no one said this, it probably needs to be said, the media needs to actually think about the fact that sometimes journalists operate on the edge of the law. Now, if you get a classified document, and I've got plenty over the years, do you choose to publish that document, place it online in a way that actually waves a red flag to the bull that says, come and raid me? Or is it cleverer to say, we've cited something, or we're aware of something, or we understand? The public still gets the information, but you're not actually saying to the police, hey, here's a stolen document, and I'm publishing it for everyone to see. So I think we've also got to be responsible as lawful citizens, as journalists, and sometimes the media slips in that regard as well.
And I think that's where you're protecting the whistleblower in that case, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Guys, it's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you very much for joining us. Nick McKenzie, Deputy Editor of the Investigations Team at The Age, Adele Ferguson, Star Business Reporter, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks, Batch.
Peter Harcher here, political and international editor of the Sydney Morning Herald. In an era of fake news and shifting global power, it's critical that your news is genuine and independent. Our reporters in Asia, Europe and the US work hard to report global stories and how they affect our region. Independent reporting on the ground is crucial to the integrity of our coverage, which we could not do without our subscribers. Support news you can trust and subscribe today.
Johan Lidberg is a professor at Monash University specialising in press freedom and public interest journalism. This week he wrote that Australia had arrived at a crossroads, with one sign reading more security laws, the other reading a healthy democracy. It's at this crossroad that he joins us this week. Johan, thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome.
If we can take a step back for a moment, compared to 10 or 15 years ago, is Australia more or less transparent?
much less. So the big issue here, of course, was September 11, 2001, and the terror attacks in the US. And it wasn't only Australia that went into, you know, hyper mode in terms of legislation when it comes to national security and anti-terror laws, but Australia by far went the furthest.
What did we do that went further than others?
So all countries need to prioritise national security, especially after, you know, big international terror attacks. But what we did came in a number of waves, and I usually classify them as three. One of the first ones was the immediate reaction when we looked at, you know, the powers of our security agencies, who they could take in for questioning without really, you know, charging them. So the number of days that they could hold them, that was one of the first immediate ones. And then the second wave was really around how these things could be covered, discussed and reported. And that was the metadata retention laws that were hugely problematic, not only for journalists, but in general. I suppose the journalists were the ones that were at the pointy end of this. You know, the metadata laws, of course, enables police and security agencies to, via the data surrounding SMSs, phone calls, emails and so on, you can pinpoint and trace a source. That was the second wave. And then we've had the third wave just a few years ago, which was around receiving information that was confidential or potentially confidential. And that was really where myself and a number of other researchers thought we have arrived at this crossroad now, because just receiving, holding that information, not even publishing it, could potentially be a breach of laws. And that's going way further than any other mature liberal democracy.
And Australia doesn't have any of the countervailing protections that some of the other democracies have either. Even if some democracies, say, for example, Britain or the United States, were to enact some of these laws under national security auspice, they would be a countervailing argument, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Had we had some sort of Bill of Rights, Charter of Rights, that really sets the baseline for the relationship between citizens, which way I will include journalists, the baseline for the relationship between citizens and the state, then every time there was a new amendment or a law suggested, that would have had to be weighed against that sort of legal framework. And because we don't have that, shall we say, check on lawmaking, it's been hugely problematic.
Nick McKenzie said earlier that there was an expectation until now that police would not take that step, and almost a convention that you didn't go there. That seems to either be breaking down or have broken down. Do you think we have a cultural issue or problem here in Australia?
We do. A pretty big one. So I would say this has now broken down. So this is what myself and a number of other people have warned about for years. We've said, we've made the point, you can't set up such a web of regulation and laws around all our civil liberties, not only freedom of speech, but all our civil liberties. You can't set up such a web and extend such powers to security agencies without them eventually being used. There is no other example where that has not played out. So our cultural issue really, to my mind, comes back to what we call the Westminster system, where we took both a lot of the Westminster culture and incorporated that into our political system, and also part of the Washington system, you know, the balance of powers. The problem was that we took some of the worst things from Westminster and didn't really incorporate the good things from the Washington system. So from Westminster, we took this culture of secrecy, which is epitomised by the Official Secrets Act in the UK of 1919.
And our Crimes Act, Section 70, which was the basis for the raids last week,
correct,
were in fact modelled on the Official Secrets Act.
Correct. So we don't have an Official Secrets Act as such, but it permeates lots of different, sort of infused into lots of different pieces of legislation. And we have to remember too that those criminal codes, they exist in all jurisdictions. So, you know, it's not only the Commonwealth. So we sort of adopted that and the culture of secrecy. And then from the Washington system, we did not adopt the Bill of Rights. So had we done that, it probably would have been less problematic. But because we have created this culture, which is based on secrecy, I mean, there are a number of examples. You only need to ask Australian journalists who went to Afghanistan to cover the conflict there, the enormous problems they had to get anyone to talk from the Australian Department of Defence or to even get embedded with the Australian troops. Compare that to the access that they got to American troops, you know, and that's an example of that culture of secrecy where in Australia and in Australian governance, it is assumed that you can't both govern and be open, you know, you have to have either or, which we've seen there are a number of examples around the globe where it's working very well. Thank you very much.
The government, and Scott Morrison has said he's a big believer in press freedom. Barnaby Joyce says it's absolute rubbish that these raids would impinge on press freedom. And the new communications minister, Paul Fletcher, likewise has said he backs press freedom. Why should we not trust them when they say that they are supporters of open and transparent discussion?
The raids happened. So we have.
But
now,
they say that's an AFP decision that they don't have anything to do with. It's arm's length from
them. I don't buy that at all. That's the buck stops with the government, and not only this government, but we have to realise this has been bipartisan. This web of security, national security and anti-terror laws, that's been pretty much passed bipartisan ever since 2001. It's only in the last few years that we've heard some, you know, rumblings from the Labour side saying, well, maybe we need to look at this. But by and large, it's just been passed. And you can't say that the AFP is just doing this independently. They are in executing those really broad-ranging warrants, but they're doing it based on what consecutive governments have put in place. So to say that we're once removed from this, that's rubbish.
There's been various suggestions about what we might do in response to this as a public. One is a Bill of Rights, as you've spoken about. One is a Press Freedom Act of some kind, an Act of Parliament that doesn't require constitutional change and a referendum. And then, of course, there's the idea that you could insert in the security laws and some of the other laws a protection, as was entered into the metadata law, that gives some protection against snooping against journalists or jailing of journalists for receiving this kind of information. Do you have an idea of what you would like to see in place?
I would love a Bill of Rights or a Charter of Rights, or call it whatever you want, that is part of the Constitution. I think that's our civil liberties, including free speech and press freedom, does deserve that, I think. So that's my top on my wish list. But when you look historically at Australia, we're not very interested in changing our constitution. You know, there's been, if memory serves, there's been more than 44 suggestions put to the people for changes to the constitution. I think it's changed 6 times on very sort of procedural things. So I think that would be very hard. I think it's much more realistic to look for a media freedom and Civil Liberties Act. I think it's important to widen it beyond media here. I think we need to explain to the Australian people why this is really important. And unfortunately, the Australian people, in some respect, don't have all that high regard for media, perhaps. So I think we need to talk to them about this goes beyond free speech. It's about freedom of religion, to quote one of Prime Minister Morrison's favourite topics. It's about freedom of assembly. It's about all those civil liberties that we take for granted as part of a liberal democracy. So I think that would have a greater chance of getting up, and it would also make it, it would balance the whole hyper-legislation thing around national security and anti-terrorism much better, I think. So, yeah, a Media Freedom and Civil Liberties Act.
And if part of the problem is culture, a culture problem both in the bureaucracy and government, but also perhaps in the wider society, could an act like that help address that cultural issue?
So my research clearly shows that you can't only legislate culture, right? So you can start with an act as a foundation, as a base point to take off from. Take the Freedom of Information Acts that we have, for instance. Some of them are really good when it comes to black letter law, but then you need to implement them. And that really hinges on the culture of the of the public servants that that do implement them, and I'm looking into that at the moment. Similar thing with the Media Freedom and Civil Liberties Act. Even if that was really well drafted, it needs to be coupled with, you know, concerted efforts to address this culture of secrecy. We need to get away from that in our administration, where actually openness becomes the default rather than secrecy being the default. That's not going to happen quickly, but we need to start somewhere, because where we are now, it's not a very pleasant place to be.
Johan Lidberg, thank you very much for joining us. Johan is a professor at Monash University specialising in press freedom and public interest journalism.
Thanks.
Thanks to our guests this week, investigative reporters Adele Ferguson and Nick McKenzie, and Monash University professor Johan Lidberg. We've really enjoyed getting your feedback and ideas. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is in the show notes for this episode. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Subscribers power our award-winning journalism, and it's never been a better time to support us. Just search Subscribe Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. Thanks to the team behind this week's episode, our producer and editor David Estcourt, and Amelia Maguire for taking care of our logistics and planning. Cormac Lally manages our recordings, and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. I'm Michael Batchelard. Thanks for listening.